Hey, and welcome back to another episode of The Hot Slice. I am Executive Editor Denise Greer, and I'm with Jeremy White, Mr. Editor-in-Chief himself. Hey, Jeremy.
Hey, Denise. How's your day going?
Hey, it's sunny outside here in Louisville, which is amazing. So I'm pretty happy right now.
We need that. The country needs some sunshine and some good news right now in general.
I know. Well, we're about to give them a really fun interview.
Yeah,
well,
we are.
The beginning is not so fun because we're talking about some really serious things. But we are talking to two of the biggest names in the business. Why don't you tell them who we're talking to?
The one and only Tony Gemignani and his, I would say, trusted sidekick. But, she has grown way past the sidekick now. As you say, she's a master in her own right, Miss Laura Meyer. So Tony and Laura have worked together for a very, very long time out in San Francisco. And Laura now also contributes to the magazine and Pizza Expo. Big part of what the industry has in store as it moves forward. She really kind of picks up that flag in a lot of ways for the future of the industry. So it's really cool to be able to talk to her alongside Tony. A lot of times we'll interview them separately depending on the subject matter, and mm-hmm. we brought them in together, which was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think we looked at it and we were like, you know what, that would be fun to have them both on an episode. That way we can talk to them. We had a lot of fun with them, talking about the industry, talking about what's happening right now with COVID, but also talking about pizza making and the future of pizza and kind of what's on the horizon and what's trending. So I'm really looking forward to people seeing this.
Yeah, likewise. It's a relevant episode, as most episodes are. And anytime Tony and Laura are contributing their expertise and their insights, you know the information is going to be very valuable and helpful to other pizzeria owners across the country.
Absolutely. So let's just jump right into talking with Tony and Laura.
Performance Food Service is proud to deliver high-quality products, innovative technology, and custom operational solutions to restaurants of all sizes across the country. The flagship division of Performance Food Group, with deep roots in the restaurant industry, Performance Food Service has been the exclusive distributor of the Roma family of brands for more than 65 years. This signature relationship has allowed Performance Food Service to become a leader in the pizza and Italian segment of food service nationwide.
With extraordinary pizza cheese comes extraordinary rewards. Only Baccio Exceptional Italian Pizza Cheese offers the Gold Club Rewards program with monthly cash back on every cheese purchase. Members also receive funds twice per year for use in their exclusive marketing store. It's their way of saying grazie to customers. Schedule a demonstration at bacciocheese.com/hotslice to discover how rewarding Baccio Exceptional Italian Pizza Cheese can be. Pizza is your legacy. Build it with Baccio.
Been tough, especially San Francisco. They shut us down for outdoor dining and inside dining. We built so many of these outdoor parklets that cost a ton of money, from the roof to the lighting, from the fire extinguishers to the little gates and everything. So that right there was like right when everyone was finished building all these. I'm talking about in North Beach, San Francisco, Tony's, Giovanni's, Capo, Slice House. All of a sudden, he said, now you can't have outdoor seating. So that was a big pushback. That hurt us a lot. And people want to dine in. People want to sit down. So we've always had strong to-go and delivery. It's always been great. But, a big chunk of our annual sales is dine in and the bar and everything. So it's been a struggle. Las Vegas has been a big struggle, too. It's kind of been up and down. But we're maintaining it. I have a couple stores that are shut down. Sacramento Pizza Rock is shut down, and that one is going to be one that we don't know what's going to happen there.
That's a shame. It sounds like there might be a second round of payroll protection program funding
starting this week,
getting released now.
Yeah, it's 25%, down in sales, but that could be not just annually; it could be per quarter. So everybody's second quarter 2020 was bad, really bad. That's when it all hit. Mm-hmm. So a lot of us are getting together. I talked to LaMarca. I talked to Scott Anthony, Bogats, and we were always on the phone constantly about, hey, how do we do this? How do we, how are we able to apply for this? So we're hoping that will come through for a lot of the restaurants. But there's some areas that just are so bad right now, like around the Capitol and Sacramento. I mean, mm-hmm. there's nobody open. Any financial districts right now, downtown areas are literally like ghost towns, boarded up and tagged and spray painted. And there's a lot of homeless. So those areas for operators, which I have one, Sacramento, it's scary. Very scary.
Yeah. Wow. What's the scene like in San Francisco? I know LA is just horrible right now, but is San Francisco as bad right now as what we're seeing in LA?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Laura, it's not as bad as LA. I mean, I don't see, I mean, we've always locked down very tight, very fast. Our health department, our mayor, of course, the governor, but yeah, San Francisco isn't as bad as LA. But, you know, obviously California in its entirety is the leader in the most COVID cases, I believe, out of any state. So it is scary that it could creep up on us. But New Year's is over. Christmas is over. The gatherings, the get-togethers, the family outings are gone. So I think it's going to get better and stabilize. So you're always looking at that percentage of ICU beds and everything like that that's available, that's open. So Laura sees it too. I mean, Laura goes from Oakland to San Francisco because she's living in Oakland now every day. So I think, how's Oakland and San Francisco, Laura? What's that like right now? I'm not in Oakland a lot.
I mean, it's pretty similar to San Francisco. I mean, it's like Tony said, San Francisco has been doing probably the best out of the Bay Area just because the mayor has really jumped on, you know, the closures, doing things earlier than normal. And I know that that upsets a lot of people because she's decided to shut down before the state has mandated a shutdown. But it's kind of helped us in the long run in the sense of our numbers are doing better. But it's slowly starting to creep up. I mean, Oakland is, it's really kind of sad. I live in an area that has a lot of life to it usually. And just like San Francisco, everything's shut down. It's boarded up. You know, there's a few restaurants that have been able to put out those parklets and do all the construction for it. And then now it's just sitting there empty. You know, mostly now it's, unfortunately, the homeless are sleeping in the parklets now. And it's just, it's a really tough and kind of sad situation because, you know, you want to help and do the best you can, even just for the people that you work with. And you know, the rest of the city is suffering. So it's a little tough.
Laura, what's your staffing situation like right now?
Staffing is another kind of a tough area just because we had to cut down our staff as much as we could just to, you know, make ends meet. And we're trying to give as many people hours as we can and kind of split shifts, split days, you know, and make sure that, you know, everyone that we can is getting something and getting some kind of a routine. I've noticed just by being in the kitchen that even just one day a week, if someone can work one day a week right now, just even the morale aspect of getting out of the house and having a routine for people has been huge. And so if we can do that, if someone, you know, can split shifts with someone else, then we've been doing it. And I know that a lot of our staff that has been able to work has been really grateful for it and has been doing a kick-ass job. But it's also been really hard because obviously we can't have our full staff. So, you know, there's only a handful of people in the kitchen now where it used to be like a beehive. So yeah. It's definitely a little tough, but we're doing the best we can.
How often do you get a call that, you know, I've got a quarantine for 10 days or 14 days. I can't come in because my wife or my son tested positive for COVID. Now I'm on a self-quarantine. How often have you had to deal with that?
Well, I haven't had to deal with it directly too much because thankfully the staff that I work with daily, we haven't really had any call outs for that matter. I know that some of the other restaurants, Tony would be able to attest to it better. I know some of the other restaurants occasionally have had it. I mean, thankfully it hasn't been like an everyday occurrence or anything like that. Usually once someone says it, you know, everyone kind of jumps to and, you know, makes sure that, you know, the phone tree activates pretty much. And yeah. So you know, we really kind of spread the word about, okay, this has happened, you know, if you want to quarantine, you know, or whatever needs to happen, the full sanitation process, you know, all that kind of stuff. So as bad as it, as the situation might get, it, we're kind of practiced at it, I guess, by now, because it's going on almost a year. So if and when it ever does happen, you know, we make sure that the employee gets whatever they need, sure, but that we also make sure that the staff in the restaurant is still able to function. So
yeah, we've been pretty lucky at Capo's, knock on wood, but all my other restaurants, we've had issues that have come up quite a bit from since the beginning, since I would say probably the end of March. So yeah, we've been dealing with it. Like she said, like Laura said, yeah, it's almost protocol right now. If somebody does get it, it's pretty routine. I deal with it quite a bit. I even had a scare too. My babysitter got, family's got COVID. My son spent the night 2 days before that. And then I was quarantined, didn't know what was going to happen. We had to get tested. Then I'm like, man, being off for 10 days from work, I was like, okay, what am I going to do? I was like, it was just insane. I mean, it was like, I couldn't get used to it. It bothered me, but I was working from home a lot. And I was in the middle of that. We were all fine. We tested negative. It was good. But yeah, you go through the protocol, you get the call. It's always early in the morning. Yeah, I got a fever, or I'm not feeling so good, or I have flu-like symptoms. And it's like, okay, here we go again. And it's, it's scary as an owner operator. First thing you worry about are your employees. I mean, like, you're like, okay, I hope they'll be okay. And luckily, knock on wood, people have come out of it and are okay. But yeah, we, and the health department, honestly, has been great on it. The health department is one of those things, you always worry about the health department as an owner. They've been kind of rock solid when it's come to that. They call you, they follow up, they ask you the questions you're supposed to do. They're not there to just try to shut you down right away. They want to know if three or more people have had it within 2 weeks. And if not, where did this person get it? And usually everybody has gotten it or has gotten it is from a family member living in the house, going out in an area without a mask or with a group of people, and, or in like an apartment complex that just everybody got in the apartment complex. So that's always been the case. We've luckily never had it where everybody got it from each other. It's just one person that got it. And then they quarantined and took care of themselves. So.
Wow. Strange times.
Jeremy, did you think that we were going to be here almost a year later in kind of a similar place? How about that, Tony? Oh, my goodness.
No, I didn't. Tony, we talked to you in the very beginning, and at that time, there were some extra protections for employees from the federal government. The people who were on unemployment were receiving, I think it was an extra $600 or something like that, and that made it tough to even find people to work because it had that extra money coming in, and they didn't want to work. Now that that funding has run out, is it easier to get people to work again? Or are people saying, hey, I don't really want to come in. I'm scared of this virus and I'm scared of the potential exposure. Or are they like, please bring me back in. I need the money.
You know, it's interesting. It's good. It's a good question. It seems like the employees in the kitchen all want to work. The employees that are getting the monies, work on tips, don't have a lot of tables because we're not 100% occupancy. Those are the ones that I think take a step back and say, you know, one, why risk it? True, it's like your health comes first. Two, how many tables am I going to have today? Is it worth it? Would I get the tips? I'm making minimum wage plus tips. Or is it just better getting the $600 now? But it was $1,200, if I remember right, at one time a week and or so, or 800 plus three or something like that. It's one of those things that, yeah, it was hard to find employees. I talk to operators every day like you did. And at one time last year, March, April, May, June, that kind of around when everything was coming around, nobody, it was hard to find employees. When you start to open back up those hosts, those bar backs, you know, those are the ones that are making tip money. It may not be worth coming back. So why not be healthy and be safe and stay at home? I'm not that kind of worker. I'm on the front line. I work there. Laura's like that very much so. And the management positions, I think all of them really came together and came through and helped out. But it's, yeah, those decisions that employees think about every day. And there's ones that, you know, decide to, hey, I'd rather be safe and collect my money. And I think the restaurant industry is hurting because of that, definitely in certain areas. And how do you reach a minimum? How do you, you know, what do you do? Everyone needs the money. We get that. But what's too much or what's too little? And how long do you let it go? And these businesses do have to reopen with the host and with the servers. So yeah, it's a balancing act, and it's pretty crucial to our business. And it's, yeah.
So Laura, when you are open, because you spend time in front of the house and back of the house, you kind of know all parts of the business. When you are open, are you seeing people come in and glad to be in and able to dine, or are they staying away because they're still a little hesitant and a little scared of what's out there?
Well, when we were open that little bit for dine-in, you definitely kind of saw a range. You saw it, the young crowd that was super excited to be able to socialize again. They were super excited to be able to go out again. You know, you definitely saw kind of the lifeblood that is, especially the North Beach neighborhood of San Francisco. You know, that going out, people were super excited. It was like a party every day. But then again, that was the problem. So I think a lot of people in the very beginning of that opening up again, people were super excited, but also completely kind of unaware again. And that was, I think they got distracted by that. But then on the flip side, there was also, you know, a good portion of people that didn't want to sit inside, even if it was super cold that night. They felt safer outside. And then we also have a group of regulars that I'm very close with that dines at all of our restaurants, and they're a little bit older, but they also were always telling me that they only felt safe at very specific restaurants because mm-hmm. of the spacing and the parklets. And so they would come to our restaurants because they felt the safest, and then they would go to like maybe one or two in a very specific neighborhood. And so you could definitely still see that there was a lot of fear there and kind of hesitation. But on the flip side, there was definitely a group of people that were just super excited to be able to go out again and socialize. And so it was kind of a little bit of a clash as, you know, the staffing trying to accommodate everyone and make sure that you're, you know, appeasing the people who are really excited to be there, but then also trying to encourage the people that were a little bit nervous. Mm-hmm. So
yeah,
it's a little bit of a more of a juggling act for us than it normally is. So it's a little tricky, yeah. But we make do.
I gotcha. Well, hey, Jeremy, we would be remiss not to talk about pizza making and dough, since we have two of the world's best pizza makers, right?
Yeah, they do okay.
So I am curious about what you think is the next big thing in pizza, because we saw Detroit, we've seen Roman kind of creeping up. You know, what is, you know, what's your opinion? What's the next big thing?
Well, you know, in the industry, I talked about this in a keynote, and if you guys ever wanted to look at your, you know, database, I talked about there's going to be a rise in slice houses. I said the Sparrows of yesterday are going to be the future, and you're going to see. And if you look at like what we were doing with multiple styles from Grandma, it's in the industry itself that to go and delivery type model of a slice house is coming. And it's funny, everybody wants to open up a small pizzeria right now. You think, okay, the pandemic's going on, who the heck's going to open up a restaurant? But with that in mind, I get calls every day, or not every day, but I get calls a lot about, hey, I want to open up a model. Detroit is like, I mean, we've talked about this. It's been a renaissance of Detroit, but I had Liz from Ohio contact me and say, people want Detroits. I've had people say, can you cook an uni oven at home? Can I make a Detroit in it? I've given Evelyn from Lloyd Pan so many contacts for pans. It's like, she's probably, she actually gave me some free pans the other day. She's all, just take them, it's free. So Detroit's on the rise. Grandmas are on the rise. The slice house model, to-go delivery models, is definitely on the rise. And we have several that are going to be opening up in the next 24 months, which is kind of nice that's happening. And then the big box restaurants, like I guess you could say the Pizza Rocks 200 seat restaurant, are the ones you're kind of taking a step back and saying, is this the future? What do we do? I mean, those are the things we're thinking about, just like any restaurateur that has a lot of seats. So yeah, I think Laura will probably say, what, focaccia is on the rise, right? Laura, no pun intended, on the rise.
Didn't she sell a whole bunch of those over the weekend? I saw some.
Yeah, sold out in 2 hours. So come on, tell us, Laura, what the focaccia.
Well, I kind of was thinking the same kind of thing along the lines of what Tony was saying, in the sense of, I don't really see it as one particular style that's going to kind of take over, but kind of a concept, just because we've had to completely restructure everything. And so I don't think it's ever really going to go back to 100% of what it was. And so I definitely think I've noticed that a lot of people are opening more of kind of that fast casual concept, as opposed to that full on dining. But I see a lot of kind of what it's been before, but super high hydrations. People are really starting to get into but more into that. The super high hydrations, more of the blends. I see more people blending flowers now, as opposed to just one bag and that's it. I just think a lot more people are educated now about everything. And so I think people are just doing a lot more experimentation. I see a lot more bread techniques now incorporated into pizza making. So I just see kind of that line between bread and pizza blurring that much more in the next coming years.
And it's something like we've always taught at the school. We've always used starters in our dough. We've always done bulk ferments and high hydrations. And we've taught like students, like some of the people we were talking about earlier, that have done it. But now you see on Instagram and Facebook, like Laura was saying, everybody's reaching out to us about bigas and pooleshes and how do you put more water? How do you ball dough that's super wet? I mean, those are kind of things that we're getting emails about all the time. But, you know, what's funny is tavern style, you're going to see, you know, cracker thin. I mean, if you look at Ceramelli, what he just posted, Adam in New York that just posted him, some of these guys that are posting pizzas, just tavern cracker thin pizzas, like that style is actually gaining a little momentum. In Pizza Today, I have a new one coming out. It's dedicated to the deluxe. And if you're in Chicago, yeah, the deluxe pizza is like, it's their standardized combo. But anywhere else in the U.S., you're like, oh, what's a deluxe? Just the combo? No, it has to be like green peppers and sausage and mushrooms. I kind of bumped it up and made it a little different. I roasted red peppers. I used button mushrooms in that recipe. But I get
you let them remain big. You didn't cut them up real
small. Yeah, I did. I Californian it out a little bit. But and all these guys from Chicago are like, it has to be, you know, green bell peppers. Come on. And it has to be diced.
Always the green.
Yeah, and, you know, I call Troiano. I'm all – it's like green bell peppers, right? Diced. And Troiano from Chicago is like, yeah, it is. Okay, I'm going to roast red because it's better. No, you can't do that. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to do that. So anyway, that recipe that's coming out in the magazine it's a pizza that's similar to what I'm doing in Capo's and wrote it in the book. But that's a style that you're seeing tavern cracker thin that is really kind of popping up in a lot of places. You're going to see that as well.
Denise, they both had great articles in this upcoming issue of Pizza Today. Yes, Tony wrote about that cracker thin deluxe tavern style, as he just said. And Laura did a need to know dough article where she really ran the gamut and talked about a lot of different things, from proofing to some mixing times and all kinds of good stuff.
Yeah. What I think is really fun is here we have student has become the master, right? So the one thing I would love to know is, Tony, now that Laura has become, this master, what have you learned from her since she's kind of risen up? That's what I want to know, right?
That's a good question.
I think we always learn from each other. You know, hearing Laura speak about pizza in general when we're teaching, I'll listen to her and I'll say, huh, I love, she explains things extremely well. There's times that, like for yesterday, I use an example. I was talking to Liz from, was it Penny Wheat? I was helping her with her Detroit. And I talked, she says, I need to get the pans. I need to do this. Everyone's asking for it. Okay, so I'm talking to her about it. And I said, you know, when that pizza comes out of the oven, let it sit for about a minute, minute and a half. I'm gonna Laura Meyer it right now. And then Liz is all laughing. I'm like, let it sit, let it pull away from the edges, and you'll be able to chisel it out of that pan easier. So there's a lot of times that, you know, her mentality going into it, Laura's extremely intelligent. She's book savvy, she's smart. So when she looks at things in a way that not everybody looks at things. So she'll always try to make it better. And it's something I always say, we can always make it better. I don't care what it is. Like, you look at something, we can figure it out to make it better. I mean, be content, but make it better. So she's learned that. And I think I preach that a lot, and she'll look at it and she'll say, I can explain this better, so this person can understand it, not in our terms, because sometimes we'll go wacky and say all these things and digestibility and they're feeding on it. And she's like, they don't really even get it. We need to kind of slow it down and do it. So I've watched her over the years develop that. And it's really nice to see. She can explain things. So I've learned a lot from her over the years, honestly. And I love it. It's a pleasure working with her. As long as she doesn't hit me, when she hits me really hard, and it doesn't feel good. But
yeah, I love it. Always gets in my way.
Pitches are often cramped, so I understand.
I think it's very much a give and a take. I think over the years, like Tony kind of touched on, and it's something that I always tell people, is that when he's learning, I'm learning, and vice versa. And it was something that I always kind of was drawn to in the beginning, was that he was always trying to learn something. And that was something that I always gravitated towards, because it was like, okay, well, if he's going to learn it, then maybe he'll teach me, and vice versa. And I feel like that's one of the big things that's made our partnership so successful, is because we're always trying to learn something new, but then also share it with each other. And, you know, it's one of those kind of a give and a take, and it's been a wild ride for sure. But it's been a great one, because we've experienced so many things and we've learned so much along the way, and it's been great.
I always kind of look at it, it's very much a John Arena, Chris Decker kind of relationship with Laura and I. You know, she was young when she started at Paisano. She was 16, I think. Wow. You know, she developed, wanted to learn, had an open mind. Constructive criticism is important to understand it. I get criticized, she should understand it. We're not there to make fun of each other or to be crucial to each other, but we need to critique it. We need to look at it and say, you know what? We're always trying to make it better. And evolution is important. People think that, we just stop. I research pizza every day. So does Laura. I'm on every site. I'm looking at things, and people may think, oh, he stopped, or no, we create the curve. How do you do that? How do you become ahead of it? How do you do it before it becomes mainstream, from cast irons to Detroit's to tavern to grandma, whatever. And those are things you always constantly are learning and evolving. So people may think that, hey, oh, these guys are, they won it and they've done it and they have all these restaurants and they're doing everything. We are constantly talking about pizza every day, and we're not just Googling it. We actually go there and learn and research. So the R&D involved to keep it going and to keep yourself relevant, because Tony's could have been relevant. Capo's could have been, you know, it could have been irrelevant like at times. So you always have to constantly just evolve and that's something that I try to tell everybody, even when we teach, even Laura says that we're constantly evolving and trying to be better. So sometimes people just give up, and it's not like that. it, you can become old very fast in this industry, in any industry, especially as a chef. You could be the hot, you know, pizza maker under 30 this year, and people will forget about you in 2 years. And you're like, what's he doing? It's the same old thing. So, yeah. And I think that's what, when we started multi styles, it was like Tony's when we opened it. They said, it will never be done. We don't get it. Why do you want all these ovens and all these styles? And why does anyone care? And then all of a sudden now, 12 years later, people have 3-4 styles. New Yorkers love Chicago, or vice versa. And everybody's hugging, and Neapolitan and Roman get along now. And so it's like back in the day, and you know this, it was never like that. It was only, this is what I do. I like Neapolitan. That's the way it's supposed to be. And now these guys are buying, you know, electric ovens and doing New York and Neapolitan and stuff. So it's funny. It's people need to have an open mind. People need to understand that pizza is amazing. It's in its entirety. And if you do it right, it could be celebrated and be awesome. And now the world's kind of coming to that. People like options. Consumers are smarter now. They want to see what that was on that Instagram. Where can I get it at? And it's important to understand that. I think that now you see that in operators. They're more open, and they're definitely doing multiple styles. And we're ahead of it way early in the game.
Well said. That's one of the things I've always admired about you, is you do not rest on your laurels. You understand that you've got to get up tomorrow and try to get 1% better again tomorrow, instead of just saying, yeah, I'm good, I'm done. And that's a key to success in anything, pizza or otherwise. And I'm really glad you said that. I had one last question for you before I let you guys go. The new Pizza Expo 365 platform, which is going to launch on January 19th. And I know you've got a part in that. You have a booth on there and you're contributing some content. What exactly are you guys planning for the platform?
Well, so we're going to have the platform's International School of Pizza. And a lot of people call up, especially Laura, all the time asking, hey, what's the school about? What's it like? And this isn't a mock school. I always said, I visited schools in Italy, and back in the day, all those schools were very mock type schools. So it's almost like going to college and you get your degree and you go out to the real world. You know, this school's in Tony's and Slice House in San Francisco. You're not only training from Laura and I, you know, how to make dough, how to, you know, work out the workbook and everything, but you're going to be working in a kitchen. So you're going to see real tags. You see expediters, runners, front of the house, back of the house. You're going to see the bar, you're going to see the Slice House. So when it comes to our school, people don't really realize that as much as when they get there, like, wow. And everybody, anybody who's never, you know, really worked in a kitchen, get to work in a kitchen. So that really, actually, over the years, we've added more of working in the kitchen, learning that other than just learning recipes. So we're going to kind of show you behind the scenes, and there's going to be 1 minute clips of making dough, gluten-free pizza, Laura making agave pesto. We're doing a number of different footage, and we're teaming up with a local production company to really get this formatted. We're actually filming all this month. We're going to upload that on our platform. And then on that platform, we're going to have a little bit of a Q&A, and not so much of consulting kind of, but then again, we said, well, maybe we'll get into 100 people into a Zoom call. People can ask us questions. We may do something, maybe there's a small charge or fee involved. But it's really about, too, is just saying, hey, we're going to be at this booth at Expo in late June. Come visit us. And here's a little taste of what our business and our school's about. What's also special, too, is we're in the middle of building a bakery in San Francisco. We moved all the dough production into there. And now not only are students going to be able to work in the school and in the Slice House and kind of in Capo's, too, now they have an opportunity to see sourdough, naturally leavened breads being made. We're going to be doing a lot of things out of it. It's right down the street. You're going to see all these mixers lined up, and they're going to be able to see now a production facility making bread, making dough, thousands and thousands of dough balls, and be able to see Gold Belly production on how we actually do Gold Belly in our facility and ghost kitchens too. So we do virtual kitchens out of there. We're doing Gold Belly out of there. I'm getting calls from guys saying, hey, how do you do frozen pizzas, and send them nationwide? students are going to be able to actually see all these different lines of production and not just making like, hey, this is how you make a pizza. They're going to see how an operation works. So we're excited to actually launch that this year.
Now, is that going to act as a commissary for your other restaurants as well?
It's a commissary that is for Capo's, Tony's, Slice House. Within that, the Giusto's, Nikki Keith and Giusto to do central milling. We're coming together doing all naturally leavened breads. So you'll see sourdough breads. There's something I can't say that we're going to be doing there that's going to be kind of exciting that people are going to be blown away by when they see it. And you're going to see dough on a magnitude. And then we're going to have a kitchen inside it where we're going to be able to up our Gold Belly, because Gold Belly is nationwide delivery. Every pizza guy in the world has been on these platforms. And now you're able to really see, not just doing it out of Tony's and putting it in our walk-in, but really to see like it production and it goes into the freezer and the UPS gets picked up 5 days a week. You know, we're doing 120 pizzas a day through Gold Belly, 5 days a week, and how they're packaged and sealed. And it's just, that's a big part of the equation now. There's that pizza equation now that everyone's trying to figure out. Now that catering's gone and all these things are gone, I have to go and delivery. Well, how do you do take and bakes? How do you do frozen pizzas? How do you do refrigerated pizzas? We're doing that in all of our operations now. But now it's going to be in the one hub. And we're excited as students. Not only we're excited to do it, we're excited for our students to see this. And we get calls now on frozen and par bakes all the time. That's what everyone's trying to kind of leap into, because it's, you know, you always said dine-in, to-go, delivery, catering. Now the frozen pizza, par bake pizza, take and bake pizza element is kind of taken over a lot of it. Wow. So yeah, it's a big part of our focus, and we're really showing students and neighborhood like what that's all about.
Simply amazing. Always a leader in the industry, and that's going to be extremely valuable and helpful to a lot of people. That's
absolutely. We think so. And honestly, Laura sees it all the time too. She gets a lot of the calls, right, Laura? You get all the messages. Hey, what kind of mixer do you have? Or hey, how do you ball? Right.
Everything, every question you can, it's like people just whatever comes into their head, they send our way.
I sent her a question the other week. I'm like, hey, do you guys know how to do Pensa? Cause I'm really curious about what that even is and how to use it. And she's like, we know about it, but we're not really exploring it right now. So that was just, so I'm sure she gets every question imaginable.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. But really, you know, it's funny. It's like, if you look at even the frozen lines, a lot of people are buying from Uline, and there's 24-hour insulators, 48-hour insulators. Well, doing pizzas in Arizona or Vegas, 110 degrees in a UPS truck, and that's got thrown in there at, you know, 1 o'clock, and it got to the airport, and next day aired next day, a lot of those pizzas are coming unfrozen, warm. And like these questions that I've been doing Gold Belly forever. So now working on that, paying more money for insulators or cheaper ice packs, those kind of things that you're saying, hey, does P&R paper have cheaper, or can I get it through Uline, and how much shipping and in the box and everything? There's a lot of things that we've gone through, the growing pains of trying to make next day delivered frozen pizzas the best, from the sealer to the bag that it goes into to the perfect crust liner. There's so many things involved in it, and those are the kind of things that we've, you know, it's been tried and true, and we're still learning, don't get me wrong, but everyone's getting in that game right now, and I think it's going to be here for a while. My Gold Belly has gone up like that, and we're glad that we're in it for years and years and years. But yeah, those are kind of things that people are asking. You wouldn't think people would really ask about, but it's pretty common right now.
Yeah, we just talked to Chris and Miga from Pizzeria Caldera in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, and they've gotten into the game big time too. It's definitely one of those markets where everybody's curious about it and everybody's asking about it. And it's definitely on our editorial planning agenda soon too.
Great. And especially with everybody's, you know, everyone wants biodegradable, you know, especially with when San Francisco switched to no, as little plastic as possible, you know, all of the packaging keeps changing. And so when the packaging keeps changing and updating, then that means we have to readjust and reevaluate our package, everything, you know, and how it works. So it's constantly evolving, but, it's been good.
That's awesome.
Wow. I never would have thought, you know, 15 or 20 years ago, we would get questions about that. And then it's been quite a while since those questions have surfaced. And now here they are again.
Yeah, right. That's true. And you even see Neapolitan guys shrink wrapping their dough and sending them nationwide. You would never think in a million years that you'd ever see that in your life, or even top chefs that are out there that would even think about selling anything frozen. And no, it's what you have pivoted to, and that's what we're doing, and we're trying to survive. So,
strange times indeed. We are all surviving though, and that's the key. So,
absolutely.
Well, Laura, Tony, thank you as always for your time, your knowledge, your expertise, your graciousness. We appreciate you guys very much, and thank you.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having us.
Thank you for having us.
You guys all have a great day.
Take care,
we'll see you.
Great day.
Enjoy.
See you.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.